Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 20, entitled Lord Vishnu's Appearance in the Sacrificial Arena. Text number 5. Atakayam imam vidvan.
Atakayam imam vidvan.
Vidya kama karma bi.
Vidya kama karma bi.
Arabdha iti naivasmin.
Arabdha iti naivasmin.
Patibuddho nushajate.
Patibuddho nushajate.
Translation. Those who are in full knowledge of the bodily conception of life, who know that this body is composed of nescience, desires and activities resulting from illusion, do not become addicted to the body. Purport. As stated in a previous verse, those with good intellect, shudhiya, do not accept themselves to be the body. Being a creation of nescience, the body has two types of activities. In the bodily conception, when we think that sense gratification will help us, we are an illusion. Another kind of illusion is to think that one will be happy by trying to satisfy the desires that arise from the illusory body, or by attaining elevation to the higher planetary systems, or by performing various types of Vedic rituals. This is all illusion. Similarly, material activities performed for political emancipation and social and humanitarian activities performed with an idea that people in the world will be happy are also illusory, because the basic principle is the bodily conception, which is illusory. Whatever we desire or perform under the bodily conception is all illusion. In other words, Lord Vishnu informed Prithu Maharaj that although the sacrificial performances set an example for ordinary people, there was no need for such sacrificial performances as far as his personal self was concerned. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, 2nd chapter, 45 verse. Tregunya Vishaya Vedha Naish Tregunya Babharjuna Nirdvandho Nityashat Vishto Yoga Shema Atmavan. The Vedas mainly deal with the subject of the three modes of material nature. Rise above these modes, O Arjuna. Be transcendental to all of them. Be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety. And be established in the self. The ritualistic performances recommended in the Vedas mainly depend on the three modes of material nature. Consequently, Arjuna was advised to transcend the Vedic activities. The activities Arjuna was advised to perform were the transcendental activities of devotional service. Translation again. Those who are in full knowledge of the bodily conception of life, who know that this body is composed of nescience, desires, and activities resulting from illusion, do not become addicted to the body. In this verse, we hear, once again, that we are not the body. In fact, Prabhupada says that people are in so much illusion that in the bodily concept of life, they become addicted to their body. Addiction is not a generally considered a very good term. If you become over-dependent on something, you become addicted to it, and use the addiction has very bad consequences. You're addicted to a drug, you're addicted to cigarettes, you're addicted to something. It's not considered good. So this is why Prabhupada uses this particular word, addicted to the bodily concept of life, because it doesn't bring good consequences if one is addicted to the bodily concept of life. Of course, this is all elementary knowledge. In America, we call the first years of school elementary school. There's preschool, which is like kindergarten, and there's elementary school, which means like, I think it's up to the fourth grade. And what do you learn in elementary school? Of course, for an elementary student, it's something significant. But for those of us who have moved on, what is elementary school? A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. And I always forget the second half. Thank you. Or, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Or Sally C. Scott. Or Tom went home. Or, you know, okay. I've been there, I've done that. Elementary school. So generally when devotees hear a verse like this and the purport, and we think, oh, another verse, we're not the body. But we need to understand this. Not only do we have to hear, we have to assimilate, understand, and we have to realize that we're not the body. Just if we can just do that in one lifetime, that is something significant. Ahamamati means I am the body. To go from Ahamamati to Aham Brahmasmi may take an entire lifetime. To go to evolve from the concept that I am the body to I am spirit, Aham Brahmasmi, may take many years. It may even take lifetimes. What to speak of becoming Krishna conscious. Conscious of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how to do that? Well, we know that repetition of something is required to properly know the subject. We've heard that before. Repetition of something is required to properly know the subject. We have to hear again and again. In Vedic age, of course, a student only needed to hear something once and could remember it forever, Prabhupada says in a purport in the Bhagavatam. That was Vedic culture. The scientists are thinking that we're evolving to the most civilized state of humanity ever known, but actually we have a different concept. Things have gone from good to worse, not from worse to better. They've gone from better to worse because of Kali Yuga. Previously, a student could hear something once and remember it forever. That's called Shruti Dhara. Shruti means to hear, and Dhara means, literally the word Dhara means to capture. To capture, you capture something, it's yours. Like Prabhupada said, if you can repeat a verse 7 times in your preaching, it's yours. Right? You Dehi no smin, what is it? Dehi no smin. Finally, you know, you get it. Use it once, twice, thrice, 4 times. And you repeat it 7 times in your preaching, your Bhagavatam classes, your Gita class on the street. It's yours. So Shruti Dhara means, Shruti means to hear, and Dhara means to capture the point. It's yours. Possession is 9/10 of the law. It's yours. To hear from the spiritual master, the knowledge, to assimilate and to realize it, is yours forever. But in Vedic culture, it just took one time. Shruti Dhara. They just hear. Ah. We hear year after year, decade after decade, generation after generation. Duh, starting to get it. This Shruti Dhara, this was something wonderful. Actually, Lord Chaitanya displayed this quality of Shruti Dhara when he debated that scholar, Keshav Kashmiri. Keshav Kashmiri was a scholar during the time of Lord Chaitanya. His profession was to debate with others. He traveled widely and debated, and he was very learned, and he was never defeated. Therefore, he won the title Digvijay. Digvijay. Digvijay literally means one who has conquered everyone in all directions. 360. Not just the village or the region or the town. You know, Digvijay. One who has conquered everyone in all directions. Then you got the title Digvijay. You were undefeated. Bhakti Ratnakara actually describes Keshav Kashmiri that he was a favorite devotee of Saraswati. I remember reading that. He was a favorite of Saraswati. If Saraswati favors you, then you get the intelligence to say what is right at the right time, in the right place. So Digvijay. Acharyas have stated that actually he was Sandipani Muni in Krishna's Leela, he who gave instruction to Krishna and Balaram. But in Chaitanya Leela, by the Lord's arrangement, he appeared as Keshav Kashmiri. And by the Lord's arrangement, a little proud. One can become proud of borrowed plumes, we said the other week. Borrowed plumes. You're just whoever you are. Actually, your naked body is not very attractive, is it? But you dress it with fine cloth, silk, linen, belts, jewels, colors, and then, it's looking something nice. Borrowed plumes. In the old days, they had hats. They used to put feathers in it, and it, the amount of the colors. But take it away. So these are all. So one may acquire these qualities by the grace of the devatas, like Saraswati or Lakshmi, or ultimately the Supreme Lord himself. One may acquire them, but they're borrowed. He became a little proud of his learning. And he wanted to take on the scholars of Navadvip, because at that time, 500 years ago, Navadvip was the seat of learning in India. Through history, during history, different parts of India, different places became the seats of learning. Banaras was once a great seat of learning for the Mayavads, or the impersonalists, and South India, of course, had various. So 500 years ago, the most prominent place of learning where different scholars of different traditions and different opinions, different angles of vision, they would all come to Navadvip, and they took great pleasure in debating like this, discussing. Nowadays, people don't know very much, so they're afraid to talk to others or to engage in a debate. Actually, I was reading a survey done in America. It asked, what is your greatest fear? And it listed different, four or five different alternatives you could check. What is your greatest fear in life? And I thought it would be people who were afraid of death. But do you know what the greatest fear was? Speaking in public. Can you believe it? I thought it would be death. But the greatest fear that people have is to speak in public. So, these things don't happen anymore. We don't see these debates going on. But in Vedic culture, because people like to discuss the absolute truth, regardless of what their angle was, in the general understanding, we encourage that discussion and the science of the absolute truth, rather than TV and radio and internet and all these things, which are just basically discussing, you know, nonsense, gibberish, gramya katha, village talk, who married who divorced, who killed, who lied. No. Atato brahma janasya. Now is the time to discuss spiritual subject matter, self-realization. So, you know, we have our view, which we understand is the Param Gatim, but it's nice that people used to sit and discuss logic. Just logic, niti shastra. How to do things in this world to make life a little smoother, so that you had time to become Krishna conscious. Or whatever. Any aspect of so many Vedic scriptures, different strokes for different folks. So, this is what people did with their spare time in the evening after a hard day of work in the field, cultivating the land and milking the cows and like so forth. They come together, they sit and hear Ramayana. Ramayana is one of Sri Prahlad's favorite books. You may not know that. He just touches his heart when he reads the story of Sita Ram, Lakshman, and all. Although he's rasik, aspiring for rasik bhakti with Radha and Krishna, these pastimes of Krishna as Ram and Sita, it's very moving. There's violence, there's war, there's intrigue, there's love, but all on a transcendental level. So in Vedic culture, people would sit in the evenings, little bhajan, Ramayana, Mahabharata, or some philosophy, Gita, and then kirtan, then prasad, then you go to sleep and you dream of Ram, you dream of Sita, you dream of Lakshman, Hanuman, Radha and Krishna. What you do during the day, you dream about at night. This is why our many devotees, the dreams are not so Krishna conscious, because of what we've done beforehand. Now we have to fill it all up with Krishna consciousness, and then the dreams will come about Krishna. So he came to Navadvip, where everybody was sitting around with this type of katha going on. He came for the purpose of increasing his pride by conquering all the scholars. But the scholars heard he was coming. They were afraid. Oh, Digvijay is coming? If you're not so learned, if you're not so powerful, not so influential, then this would appear to be something embarrassing, that you would be defeated. So all the scholars, they said, no, I am busy that day, I'm going to have the flu, I have another engagement, I'll be out of town. And finally some intelligent person's got, let's present Nimai Pandit. We'll present Nimai Pandit. Nimai Pandit, Lord Chaitanya is a young boy, but already so learned, vastly learned in the scriptures. So they pushed forward little Nimai. And being a child like that, he just, when the debate came, everyone was sitting and everyone was, you know, watching the debate. He took a subordinate position. He had a plan, of course. He said to the Digvijaya, he said, please use your skills in describing the glories of Mother Ganges. I want to see how learned you are. You say something about Mother Ganges. So he was a little proud, but he was very learned. So in 1 hour, Keshav Kashmiri composed 100 verses. Like the wind, it said. Just, it was almost effortless. That he'd effortlessly, the verses just came from his mouth like the wind. Very beautiful, eloquent verses describing Mother Ganges. And Lord Chaitanya was sitting there listening, and then when the Keshav Kashmiri had finished, so what do you think of my 100 verses glorifying Mother Ganges? Mahaprabhu says, wonderful. Can you explain just one to me? Keshav Kashmiri said, one. Well, which one? So Nimai Pandit, he quoted the Sanskrit and the translation for the following verse. The greatness of Mother Ganges always brilliantly exists. She is the most fortunate because she emanated from the lotus feet of Sri Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. She is a second goddess of fortune, and therefore she was always worshipped by both demigods and humanity. Endowed with all wonderful qualities, she flourishes on the head of Lord Shiva. Keshav Kashmiri, he was astounded. I said those verses like the wind. How could you remember even one? The Sanskrit and the translation. And Lord Tajana replied, Prabhu Kahi, Devara Vare Tumi Kavi Vara, Aiche Devara Vare Kecho Hari Shruti Dhara. Shruti Dhara. By the grace of the Lord, someone may become a great poet. And similarly, by his grace, someone else may become a great Shruti Dhara who can memorize anything immediately. So that's Lord Chaitanya. Of course, he's God. He's Abhigina Swarat. He's present everywhere, and he's omniscient, and he's all-knowing. So what is it? What is the difficulty in Lord Chaitanya becoming Shruti Dhara? He knows everything anyway at all times. But Lord Chaitanya displayed this quality of Shruti Dhara. He said, by the grace of the Lord, one can become a great poet, and simply by his grace, anyone can become Shruti Dhara, which means one who can memorize anything immediately. Dhara, again, to capture. So actually, you know the pastime, Lord Chaitanya discovered 5 faults in that verse by Sanskrit pronunciations and literary embellishments. He found 5 faults there, thus defeating Keshav Kashmiri. And Keshav Kashmiri actually became a great devotee. He actually took shelter in the Nimbarka Sampradaya. So this is Shruti Dhara. One who can capture something immediately and remember it. Now, if we just stop the class right here, and I said, I point to someone out, a few of you, don't get scared, I won't do it, but I said, please stand up and repeat just something I've said in the class today. You know how it is. The mind goes blank. The face flushes. You go red. I've been speaking for 20 minutes. Just stand up and repeat something that I've said. And what would you say? Oh, you spoke about Keshav Kashmiri. What did I say? I don't know, something about him, you know. You spoke about Shruti Dharma. No. Shruti Leela? Shruti Prasad? What did you... This is our situation. Even more than Shruti Dhara, in Vedic age, we hear that the student would hear first time, second time, he would understand it, and third time he would realize it. How times have changed. Nowadays we have to hear repeatedly. There's exceptions, of course, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. It said that he memorized the entire Bhagavad Gita by the time he was 5. And he could quote by memory, even in his old age, anything he'd read since the time he began to read. Any passage from any book that he read since he was 5 years old, he could quote verbatim. You wouldn't want to debate with him. He even knew your scriptures better than you knew them. Like, there was once a debate that was to take place, and the pundit said, but don't you quote from your Bhagavatam or your Chaitanya Charitamrita. You quote from the Vedas. You try to defeat us on the basis of Veda, because they were thinking that this Krishna consciousness, pure bhakti, is not mentioned in the Veda. It's a recent introduction by Lord Chaitanya. So he said, all right. So he read all the Vedas. He knew there were different passages. There's even passages from the Rig Veda which mention Prem Bhakti, etc. He defeated them on the basis of their own scriptures. They said, don't quote your Bhakti scriptures, quote our scriptures. Foundation. He defeated the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Shruti Dhara. I told you one time I met a sadhu at Radhakunda. I was walking around, when I bumped into a sadhu, he was all bent over. He just had a rag around his waist. Older man, quite old actually, rag, and bumped into him. And he said to me, excuse me, sir. He said, oh, I know. I bumped into you. You excuse me. He said, no, you're a Vaishnava. I offended you. Please forgive me. I said, Baba. I said, I was walking around, I bumped in. We have a bunch of kapha to do a best job. I said, he had this man with him. I said, who is this humble Vaishnava? He said, oh, he was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of India for many, many years. I said, what? The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of India? What's he doing here? He renounced to come to Radhakund, to be a bhava, to get love for Radha and Krishna. I said, Babaji, so nice to meet you. And then he quoted some shloka. All like the wind. I said, wow, what does that mean, Baba? And he gave some beautiful verse about the glories of devotees and how by taking shelter of devotees we can attain and get the mercy of Krishna. Then his friend said, you ask him. Any shloka he knows. I said, any shloka? Any shloka. So I quoted, what's the fourth verse of the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Then he quoted the rest of the 11th chapter. I said, wow, there's something special here. And I said, he knows Bhagavad Gita inside and out. He said, quote one verse from, ask for some verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. I said, Madhya Leela, chapter 4, verse 132. Then he went to quote many verses from that on. He said, Bhagavatam. So we were there like 20 minutes. I was just, And then finally it just took off, Pandeshamrita, Ujvala Nilamani. He's just quoting these verses. I think, whoa. And he smiled. He said, Shruti Dhara. He knows, he reads and he remembers. He was Chief Justice of Supreme Court. I said, that's nothing. This is sadhu. And not only had he learned the verses, but he'd understood them, and from what I could see, he realized them. And he just had a torn cloth around his waist, like, he had nothing but his mouth, just going around doing Radhakund Parikrama. So I slowed down, instead of like going around, I slowed down, and he continued going, and I just followed in his footsteps, literally. It was a much slower pace, but a much more sure way of getting to mercy by following in the footsteps of such a realized devotee. So, there are exceptions, but most of us are not like that. What happened? We hear in previous ages, you know, a lot of people, or most people, were like that. What happened? We're the burnt remnants of the previous ages. We're the leftovers. Who really gives much significance to leftovers? We didn't make it in the Satya Yuga, in the Treta Yuga, the Tripura Yuga. We're in the Kali Yuga. We have nothing to be proud about. No one should be proud about anything in this age. Even the greatest quality that one may possess doesn't come close to, you know, the qualities that people had in previous ages. We should really imbibe humility in order to take shelter and make progress in Krishna consciousness. What happened? We were probably around, obviously. Najayate mriyate vakara chinnayam bhutva bhavita bhanubhaya. For the soul is never birth nor death, nor having once been does he ever cease to be. He's unborn, primeval. He's not slain when the body is slain. Primeval means that we were there. What happened? Well, we took birth in Kali Yuga, and Kali Yuga stole away all those good qualities. I've quoted this verse 3 times in the last few weeks, but Tadaschanu dinam dharma satyam socham shamadhaya kalena balina rajan nanshad ayur balam shmiti. Tell the children to be quiet. Then, O King, religion, truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance, mercy, duration of life, physical strength, and memory, will all diminish day by day because of the powerful influence of this age. Just like now they try to have like what they call smoke-free environment, because they found out that it's not just by smoking that you get cancer, but just by breathing in the air of someone else's smoked a cigarette, right? So now here in Australia, everything's a smoke-free zone. I don't know where people go to smoke. They have some like cave in the bottom of the building or something. Or they go outside a little corner, they hide behind, like, you know. It's a smoke-free environment, because not just by smoking, but by being in the environment where people smoke, you can get cancer. So just to live in this age, even if you want to be good, just living in this age means you have to take on bad qualities, because there's so much bad association. People are not strong enough to resist. You know, they want to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. It's just living in this age means that you're bound to become influenced by the predominating qualities of this age, which are passion and ignorance, rajas and tamas. It's just, you know, you want to be good, but you go to the slaughterhouse of modern education, and you know, you try to be good, but the social life is so degraded that you just get swept up after a while. You want, and then you give up in your studies, you're not so good in your studies, you're just caught up in society. You know, what was considered immoral or even sinful in previous decades, it's just the norm now. It's just normal. It's just like those of us who are 60 years old, when we think about what it was like when we were 10 or 11, and what the 10 or 11 year old children are seeing and hearing and doing now, it's like my parents, I'm shocked. My parents used to say that about me. So what was it like when they were young? It's just advancing so quickly. The only shelter is the oasis of the temple, or your determination to remain pure by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Of course, we can't blame it all on the, you know, the environment, Kali Yuga. We can't blame, oh, it's the devil who made me do it, some people say. It wasn't me, Your Honor. It's the devil who made me do it. So let me, you can't say, oh, it's Kali Yuga, therefore I have an excuse. No. Our lack of cleanliness, our lack of truthfulness, our lack of mercy, our lack of memory, you can't blame it all on Kali Yuga. We ourselves do things to bring about our degraded condition. Of course, there's the influence there, but you know, it's the activities that we engage in that bring the result. Meat eating, intoxication, promiscuous sex, gambling. They steal away our God-given qualities to understand the absolute truth. We are born like, you know, like an orange. It's just this perfect package, right? God's packaged it. It's that beautiful, succulent orange inside. But he wraps it in an envelope, a skin, a peel. So perfect. An orange is God's perfect creation. It's that tender, juicy, succulent fruit. But he wraps it in an envelope. An orange peel. It's peeled away. Then you can enjoy it. So we're created by God. We're born in such a way. Om purnam adahat purnam idam purnat purnam udachyate. The universe, everything here is complete for the process of self-realization. Everything is here that we need to become Krishna conscious. We have this body. We're not the body, but thank God we have this body. It's like a Porsche in the 8,400,000 species of life. We got the Porsche. Or, you know, the Mercedes or whatever. Some of us got a Ford or a Toyota, but whatever. We got this body. It's such a perfect vehicle to take us from darkness to light, from illusion to knowledge, from the material world to the spiritual world, from here to Krishna. But we engage in activities which deteriorate the quality of the machine that God has given us to realize Him. Tvam nashandashito dhatra dushtaram nishtitirshutam kalim satvam haram pumsham karna dharari bharanam. The sages, upon greeting Śrīla Goswami in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, they say, "Sir, we think that we have met your goodness by the will of providence, just so we may accept you as captain of the ship. For those who desire to cross over the difficult ocean of Kali, kalim satvam haram pumsham, which deteriorates all the good qualities of a human being. Sattva haram. Sattva means the good things, the good qualities that we have. Cleanliness, truthfulness, mercy. Haram means to kill. Sattva haram. Those activities which kill our good qualities or deteriorate our good qualities. And it's not something, you know, illusory and subtle. It's very gross. Like drinking alcohol, taking drugs. What happens? It destroys the finer tissues in the brain by which you can sit and hear a whole class without getting disturbed. The brain is gross, but it's also subtle. But drinking that alcohol doesn't just affect your liver. You get cirrhosis of the liver by becoming an alcoholic. Or you smoke too many cigarettes and then they do the autopsy and you see how black the lungs are. But the brain is also affected. It can be rejuvenated by that miracle foodstuff called milk. When you drink milk, hot milk, before you take rest, what happens? And you read the Krishna book. It rejuvenates the destroyed cells in the brain. All that Coca-Cola and 7-Up and, dare I say, what do we drink down here? Ginger beer. It's not beer, for those who are listening to the tape. It's an Aussie thing. Ginger, the fruit drink, but bubbles. As Vamsi was telling me the other day, he said, it's full of carbon dioxide, Maharaj. We shouldn't drink, because carbon dioxide, it's very bad. It fills up the sky, and we have global warming. I said, how do you understand that as a 5-year-old kid? I said, my mommy told me. So these things, these activities which are so promiscuous in Kali Yuga, drinking alcohol, taking drugs, they destroy the finer tissues, so then when it comes time for philosophy, it goes in one ear and out the other. Our attention span is at most like 20 minutes or 40 minutes. Scientists in England have recently published a report, a cancer study on gene mutation. I was really surprised when I read it. That smoking just 15 cigarettes changes your DNA. Cancer is caused by a mistake in our natural genetic code. You all have a natural genetic code, which they're beginning to map out. But just 15 cigarettes changes one item of that genetic code. Well, big thing. Yeah, well, big thing. What is cancer? Cancer is a change in that genetic code, a mutation, maybe by nature's way, but but it can be facilitated or augmented by the degraded activities of Kali Yuga. That's why cancer is such a prominent disease in our modern times. 15 cigarettes can alter your DNA genetic code. Put that up on the billboard and see what happens. People won't even notice. So we're born with a fairly good machine, a material body, to understand the absolute truth. But it's the things that we do that break down our gross and subtle bodies, making it difficult to understand what is Krishna consciousness. What we're doing now, essentially, in Sadhana Bhakti, is repairing the machine. We're living a lifestyle. It's not just the philosophy. The life we live is also important. You're not going to just become Krishna conscious by reading the books. You have to apply the books. You have to live the lifestyle of a devotee. Rising early, showering, coming to the program, eating sattvic food, what's more offered to Krishna, cleanliness, discipline, regulation. This is all, as much damage as we've caused, it's repairing the machine, the gross and the subtle body, so that when we can sit and absorb and maybe not be Shruti Dhara, but something goes in. It's when something I'm starting to get it now, and maybe some realization will come. Of course, everything is possible by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Really, our progress is pretty much dependent upon mercy, kripa. We're pretty much lost causes. But by the combined mercy of Guru and Krishna, so many wonderful things can happen by their grace. So, Srila Vyasadeva, who's one of our gurus, understanding our situation, knowing that we're not Shruti Dhara, just hearing, what he did is he took all the Vedic scriptures and he wrote them out. He put pen to paper, so to speak. Pen to the parchment. Because previously people didn't need books. There were no books. This was an oral tradition. It was passed down from spiritual master to disciple, spiritual master to disciple. There were no books. You just heard it and you remember it. And when you became a guru, you just sat in and repeated. You knew all the shlokas, you knew all the translations, and you knew all the purports because you remember everything your spiritual master taught you. But as Kali Yuga started to come in and the influence, the devil, started to affect us, and our own desires became very strong by the influence of this age. Desires become more forceful. So then he wrote it all down. That's why we have the books, because Srila Vyasadeva could perceive what we are going to be like. All these poor people, they're not going to be able to remember anything. Let's see, I remember one time my brother, he took too many drugs. And he was foaming at the mouth, and I found him in his bedroom, and I came in and the door locked behind me. I had to smash the window and carry him out, put him in my car and drive him to the hospital. And then the doctor was saying, "What is your name?" My brother, I don't know. "What is the name of the president of this country?" "I don't know." So they determined that he had a drug overdose, you know. So, you know, it's like that in Kali Yuga. Who are you? I'm his body. No, you got the wrong answer, sir. What is the purpose of life? To enjoy it. That's the wrong answer. Does God exist? Hell no. We got all the wrong answers. We're drug induced. We're influenced by the Kali Yuga. We're really not. So, but don't worry. Every musical score must end on a high note. Da, 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 da. We don't want to leave you all depressed. There's no hope. There is hope. Kaler dosha nidhe rajan asiek mahaguna kirtanad eva krishnasya mukta sangha padam vajat. Hey king, Shukadev Goswami speaking to Maharaj Pariksit. Although this Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, there's still one good quality about this age. And what is that, sir? Simply by hearing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become free from material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom. There's hope. There's light at the end of the tunnel. Where there's life, there's hope. Like the doctor, you know, they bring somebody in from a horrific car accident into the emergency ward, and you know, everyone's given up. I mean, look at this guy. But what is the doctor's ethical motto? Where there's life, there's hope. Where there's life, there's hope. So when the sadhus see us, because they're just full of compassion, as Jesus said, my cup runneth over with love. Not just love for God, but love for everything connected to God. God's parts and parcels, God's energy, everything. My cup runneth over with, when a Vaishnav sadhu sees us in our traumatic state in Kali Yuga, like we're in the emergency room, he sees, oh, where there's life, there's hope. This person's living. Chaitanya means the eternal living force. This is Chaitanya. We have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's the supreme living force, God. But we're all Chaitanya in the sense that we have all the qualities of God. So Chaitanya. There's some Chaitanya here. There's some living energy. There's a soul. He's covered over by this ugly, gross body, which is even more ugly in the accident state. Let me inject some Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. That is our only hope. Our only hopes are ears, actually. They just say that one becomes conditioned by sound and one becomes liberated by sound. We become conditioned by hearing everything we've heard in life, and then we're living, as a result, we're living a certain way of life. But if we lend an ear to Guru Shastra and Sadhu, we can turn the whole situation around. Even at a late stage. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. Even late stage, if we come and we hear Bhagavatam. By regular attendance in the Bhagavatam class, and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious from the heart becomes destroyed almost to nil, and thus devotional service to the Lord becomes established as an irrevocable fact. This one verse is the key to overcoming this terrible tide of Kali Yuga. To come and hear the Bhagavat. To hear the Bhagavat. Or to read the Bhagavat in our spare time. Actually, everything else should be spare time. This should be the real time. This should be our real work, and in our spare time, we do other things. But, of course, we know that's not possible. But that would be nice. Prabhupada said, in Vedic age, people would work 3 to 5 months a year, planting planting the crops, nurturing them, harvesting them. And he said 7 months of the year, they had free, because they knew how to use the time. And what were they doing? Bhagavatam, Ramayana, Mahabharat, Kirtan, festivals, deity worship, like this. So if you've got time, Prabhupada said, chant Hare Krishna. If you've got some spare time, chant Hare Krishna. And that means the whole lifestyle of Krishna consciousness. Because we haven't realized the simple point that we're not the body. We're talking about shedding tears of love when we chant Krishna's name. O Govinda, feeling your separation, I'm considering a moment to be like 12 years or more. Tears are flowing from my eyes. But we still have to overcome this first hurdle. There's, you know, the race in the Olympics, they go over, what is it? I think 10 or 12 hurdles in that 100-meter dash. They jump. And we're like the horse who runs up to the first hurdle. And the rider falls off. Jump over this hurdle here. We're going to do this. Because if we find ourselves contemplating even one material desire, something wells up from the heart, or something comes up in the mind, it means that we have not fully realized we're not the body yet. Did that ever happen to you? Do you ever become overcome by lust? Or do you ever become angry? Or do you become greedy? I really admired the Dalai Lama. We went to his lecture, his public lecture in Melbourne, and he was telling a story about material desires. and how difficult they are to conquer over. And he was saying how he was in Switzerland, and he was giving a talk at someplace in Geneva or something, and he was walking down the street after the program, and he came by a shop. He didn't mention what particular shop it was, but he came across a shop, and he started looking at it. He said, everything was so nicely displayed. He said, I could not resist. Like Prabhupada said one time, someone gave him a Time magazine, was leafing through it, and he threw it away. They have made it so attractive, even I cannot resist. But he threw it away. So the Dalai Lama, he was the same way. He was saying, I was looking and it was so nice. I was thinking, I need this. He said, no, I was thinking, I must have this. He said, it had absolutely nothing to do with my way of life and what I was trying to achieve. But because it was so nicely packaged, I was thinking, I need this. I must have this. This is the art of selling things. They may not be so useful, but you make them look like, you know, everyone, they're so attractive that no one can resist. Right. So, I was admiring his honesty. He's the Dalai Lama. He's the Bodhisattva, the self-realized soul. He's the Buddha incarnate. Again, and in his humility, he's saying, I was thinking I must have, so what to speak it was. Of course, we can take it that was his humility and not a fault. We should say like that. But it's a good lesson for all of us. What do we still have any material desires? Have we crossed over the first hurdle? There's a story Prabhupada used to say of the sadhu who was giving instructions to the king, that these material desires are so powerful they may even remain in old age. And the king would say, no. By the time you're old, you're finished with these things. So the sadhu said, no. You come with me. You bring your young daughter, the princess, and we're going to visit a hospice. Hospice is a place where people go to die. So they came to the hospice. Not a hospital where you get cured, but a hospice means where the end is near. There's no further treatment. Terminal illness. Termination. Terminal illness. So they went and he said, as we walk in, you're the king. There's one old man there about to die in one of the rooms. We're going to walk in there, you, me, and your daughter. And I'm the sage, and you're the king. So we would naturally think that the old man's eyes will go to either the king out of respect or the sage for enlightenment and inspiration. Certainly not to the young, beautiful girl. I said, it's an old man. The king said, yeah, see, you probably look at me. So they walked in, and the old man, decrepit, you know, emaciated body, and the verge of death. And they walked in, and his eye, he couldn't hardly move his body, but his eyes immediately went to the young, beautiful girl, remained fixed. So Sadhu said, you see, this is the difficulty. So it's not surprising, because these things have been with us a long time. Of course, when they asked the Dalai Lama, they were asking him another question, but we can dovetail it. They asked him, one person said, Your Holiness, in my house there's lots of cockroaches. So there's so many cockroaches that I have the inclination to kill them, but according to what I've learned from you, I shouldn't kill them. So what should I do? So the Dalai Lama, he said, you should gather them all up and just throw them out the window. And he was laughing, and everyone applauded. I was thinking, that's not easy. You know, that's a nice, cute little answer. But to gather up the cockroaches, don't live out in the open. They live in secrecy. They hide. And when you turn the lights out, they come out. How do you gather them all up? So in the same way, we have these desires in our hearts. How do we gather them all up? Can we just gather them all out and throw them away? These material desires, which are indicative of that we're still in the bodily concept of life. What do you do with them? All those little cockroaches walking around in your heart. Well, one technique is to not to entertain them, and they may go away. As we've said before, just say no. If you have spiritual strength, you can say no. If you're weak, you'll say yes. This is a problem. So we have to constantly refuel the tank with spiritual strength by chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. But generally, like if you someone comes to your house, an unwanted guest, you know, sometimes it happens, they kind of just force their way in and they're staying with you for a few days. Your mother-in-law. And so how the Shastra says, how, well, Shastra, traditional wisdom says, how do you get rid of an unwanted guest? Of course, not all devotee mother-in-laws are welcome. This is just using a quote from mundane society. But how do you get the niti, traditional wisdom says, you don't feed her. Well, boy, I'm really happy to be here with all of you, and what's for breakfast? We don't eat breakfast in this house. No. No. Okay, what time's lunch? No lunch. Dinner? We're fasting. What about tomorrow? We're on a 42-day fast. No food or water. Well, I'm going. Oh, that's really too bad. So, like that, if these desires come and you don't entertain them, because we're weak, we entertain them. They come and we entertain them means that we contemplate them. We said, yes, I remember when I did that, or what it would be like if I could do that again. Or, you know, we're daydreaming. There's night dreaming, which is an illusion, of course. There's no reality in dreaming. And there's daydreaming, which is also another type of illusion. We're daydreaming. This is all in the mind. All this enjoyment is in the mind, actually. So one way to deal with it is just to don't entertain. Of course, we know a better course is to awaken our spiritual desires, which are natural. We're not desireless. We don't just get rid of the desires, and that's the state of our eternal existence. That's the problem with Buddhism. They speak about void. You get rid of the material desires, and then void. There's no such thing as a void anywhere in the creation, Prabhupada said. And it's not a question of getting rid of the material desires, because we're spiritual persons. Jivarasupoya Krishnara Nitya Das. We have spiritual body, spiritual senses, spiritual emotions. So the best way is Panam Drishta Nivartante. You get the higher taste of doing whatever you like to do for yourself. You do it for Krishna. That's the way you were created. That's how it was meant to be. Go back to being natural. Be natural. They think natural means, you know, to wear no clothes or just eat, you know, vegan food or this. No, natural means to be Krishna conscious. It may be a little difficult readapting or adapting to going back to what we were before, but it's our natural state of existence. So if you awaken the spiritual desires, then the material desires fall away, just like the skin of a snake. It's very tight on his body, the skin. But by nature's way, at a certain point in the year, it just comes off as easily as a glove. Just comes off. Or cutting your fingernails. I have to cut part of your body. No, no, no. Just cut a little bit. No, no, not even a little bit. No, come on. Cut your fingernails. Does that hurt? No. But your fingernails are living. Otherwise, how are they growing? They're also part of your body. But you cut it, there's no pain. So if you awaken your Krishna consciousness, your spiritual desires to serve Hari Guru Vaishnava, then all these nasty cockroach desires in the heart, they just go away. So that's what it means to become detached from the bodily concept of life. Not just you step back and my body. No, but the material desires, which are the essence of the body, they decrease and your spiritual desires increase. That's how you do it. So we have to hear. We don't want to hear what the unrealized souls say about the body, because that's the problem. By hearing we become conditioned, by hearing we become liberated. Conditioned hearing means all the time we're hearing all this stuff from other people about how great the body is and how we can enjoy in this world and just, you know, we're going to conquer over all these diseases and, you know, it's just everywhere you go, you're bombarded by this publicity, this advertising that eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you die. And you become convinced. Goebbels was his name. He was the propaganda personality for the the Third Reich, for the Nazi regime. He said, if you speak a lie long enough, people will begin to believe it. So what is the greatest lie that's ever been propagated? Ahamameti. I am this body. Yes. But as we become conditioned by hearing that false truth and we believe it, it becomes truth. We can become freed from that illusory concept by hearing the absolute truth. By hearing Krishna consciousness. When we come to the class, we don't ever speak about the glories. We just speak the whole truth and nothing but the truth. What is this body after all? We're so attracted. Oh, he's such a handsome man. So debonair. She's such a beautiful girl, so sophisticated and artistic and so the finesse. Voila. What is the body? 852 muscles, 260 bones, and 35 liters of liquid. Talk about liquid beauty. Prabhupada was right. 35. You have in an adult, there's 35 liters of liquid. The central nervous system is connected to every part of the body by 43 pairs of nerves. 12 pairs go to and from the brain, with 31 pairs going from the spinal cord. There are nearly 45 miles of nerves running through our bodies. What city is 45 miles from Sydney? Bara, you're a temple president. You know this city in and out. How far is Parramatta? How far is that? About 30 miles, maybe. Your nerves stretch from here to... Is it called Parramatta or Paramatma? Parramatta. We'll change the name one day. The total length of your circulatory system, including blood vessels, stretches... Get this. Circulatory system, like, you know, the veins and the tubes and the blood vessels. In one body, the total length of your circulatory system, including blood vessels, stretches 161,000 kilometers. Now, I researched this, and it's the relative truth. It's in the number of medical journals. They did, you know, maybe a few kilometers. 161,000 kilometers. If you stretched out just your one little body, it's all layer upon layer. The diameter of the Earth at the equator, if I remember correctly, is 25,000 miles, I think. So if the blood vessels of an adult were lined up end to end, that means they would circle the Earth four times. Yes. Can you believe it? Is that who you are? If you're not convinced, we'll lay it all out. When there's an accident, you see what the body really is. So, and as Prabhupada, in summary, as Prabhupada points out here, that's not the end of it. Because we're not only attached to our body, we're attached to many other extensions of our body. Pum shastriya mituni bhavam tayo mrito hridaya granti maho aho kriksepta sutapta vitar janasi maho yamaham ameti. Based on that misconception, the attraction between male and female is the principle of material existence. Based on that misconception of life, aha, which ties together the hearts of the male and the female, one begins to think in terms of, one becomes attached to his body, to the wife, or to the husband, to the children, to the household paraphernalia. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I am mine. Got it. Almost got it. Thank you, Krishna. But the point is that that verse is pointing out that our attachments are not just... We're speaking about mundane people, because to be attached to devotees is a wonderful thing. Be that a husband, a wife, a child, or a congregation, it has a different effect. Like the magnet has two. Magnet can repulse and the magnet can attract. So our attraction to devotees is a good thing. But in general, this bodily concept of life, this is very... You know, it extends like the banyan tree. in the form of my attachment to this particular family or to my ancestors or to my future generations. I leave a will to the future generations like this. It's also all the bodily concept of life. It's very deep. We don't have time to go into it now. Like a banyan tree, the roots of a banyan tree are as extensive as the branches and the twigs and the leaves itself. Any tree that you see, you look at the tree, how widespread it is. It can only survive like that if it has a stable foundation. So the roots of a tree are as wide as the branches, generally. So our attachments to this world go very deep. Beyond this body, there's many extents in the form of family, of society, friendship and love, my country. People die for their country. Attachment's so strong. This is what we have to become freed from. We can only do that by this, sitting in the Bhagavatam and hearing about the real attachments to the real family of Krishna consciousness, the spiritual family, not based on this material body, but the spirit soul, our relationship to Krishna and our loving relationship with Krishna, all that includes. That we hear. This morning, of course, was A, B, C, D, E, F, G, helping us overcome the first hurdle so that we can go on to that beautiful world of Krishna consciousness. We have a spiritual family and a spiritual father, and there's no restrictions. Life is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. But this is a good step in the right direction. As Confucius said, every journey begins with the first step. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Srila Prabhupada Ki Shishi Radha Gopinath Ki Gaur Premanandi.